Hello and welcome in.
First Science Mixtape.
Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio.
Good morning. You are listening to Science Mixtape with me, Matilda Hay. Now, many of us are taught in school that science and art are two completely different disciplines, but there is a growing appreciation of the ways in which art can inform our scientific understanding. Joining us today is the Leverhulme Artist in Residence from Imperial College, Geraldine Cox.
Hello.
Good morning. Geraldine is both a physicist and an artist who is interested in finding ways to express the hidden aspects of nature and the journey of discovery. This research has taken her to the heart of the atom, the beginnings of the universe, and the essence of light, all in a project called Finding Patterns. So welcome to the show, Geraldine. I just want to start by giving our audience a sense of the kind of scope of the art that you make. I mean, nature, atoms, the light. Can you give some examples of the pieces that you've created from these topics?
Well, you know, I'll step back one little moment. While scientists are busy finding things out, I think there's a real opportunity to discover actually new ways of talking about things. So as you've said, my work spans all sorts of things. So I might be interested in, how we move from particles. We think of the universe as being made of fundamental particles, and how then we might end up with things like evil, beauty and hope at the end. How do we move from particles to atoms to molecules? So that's a question that I'm thinking about at the moment. Or how might you build a molecule? Or what is the story of the universe? What is the oldest light in the universe? These are the questions that I ask and then try and find resonant answers that we can share with people.
And you mainly work with painting or sculpture or light, kind of?
You know,
I'm probably just using really old-fashioned options here.
I trained as a painter, and I use painting a lot. I find it just a really beautiful medium for sharing patterns. But I'm also very interested in other forms, and I'm not close to any form, really. I'm looking for resonance with an idea. So yesterday I was thinking about stained glass, for example, as a possible medium for an idea.
Right, so it's not about your technique with it, it's about the idea.
Not at all, yes. It's about finding the right way to say something. And actually I find presentations and talking and things like that can also be a beautiful way, and almost like an art form themselves, a way of sharing ideas.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Amazing. We also have in the studio with us Miriam behind the producer desk, and she has a brain teaser.
Good morning, Science Mixers. So today's brain teaser is, even though it comes in a can, this is something you shouldn't eat. Instead, you add it to walls to make a room look really neat. What am I? So I'll repeat that one more time. Even though it comes in a can, this is something you shouldn't eat. Instead, you add it to walls to make a room look really neat. What am I? So I'll tweet that out and let us know what you think.
Absolutely. Now, Geraldine, back to you. It's your mixtape. What are we kicking off with this morning? What's your first song?
I picked a piece by Rameau, who is a contemporary of Bach, and it's Act 5, prelude of a piece called, I hope I pronounce this correctly, Les Boreades or Les Boreades.
Your guess is as good as mine.
Anyway, I love it because it has a feeling of beginnings and discovery. It's very short.
One of Geraldine's pieces, called Harmony, which is part of her Nature's Notes, displays a pendulum, a circle and a sinusoidal image, which are all related to vibrations and waves in nature.
I loved how you said in the studio just then as we were playing that song that it reminds you of seeds opening. That's so gorgeous.
You can almost hear the germination.
So I want to start with this idea of finding patterns, which I think is such a cool title for your work. But what do you mean by a pattern? You mean more than just kind of a repeating sequence. That's what I kind of think of when I think of patterns.
Yes, I mean, I'm thinking of the way we symbolise ideas, the way we think about what's going on, and also the relations between things. So, for example, there are some really obvious patterns that we see. Like we see the waves on water. Everyone's familiar with that. But then there are other things going on that we can't see that we have to measure. For example, going back to the waves we just spoke about, the sun is full of vibrations. I think 10,000 at any moment, or maybe even 10 million, I forget.
Really?
Yeah. And we can draw those. We can draw those as, if you think of the sun as a circle, as things bouncing off the insides and making a beautiful, like, spirograph. I don't know if people know what spirograph is.
Yeah, yeah, when you have that stencil and you move exactly, your pencil in exactly, it and it makes these cool
exactly,
circles.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, the sun is full of those, so that, you know, that's an interesting thing to think about. And they all add up, so that the sun is sort of singing and the surface is moving in and out all over. Some pieces are moving in and some are moving out at great velocities. And, you know, to try and, that would be a pattern that would be interesting to try and capture, for example, that is less visible to us, but is happening. The sun is singing and is singing thousands of notes.
Wow. Yeah, that's so cool. Do you know what causes the vibrations?
It is, sun scientists, correct me if I'm wrong, it's plasma flows around the sun. There's so much, so when I say plasma charged particles moving around, it's tremendous heat and it's sort of convective effects happening around the edges, and then there are some waves that will go right through the centre. And there are different modes, I think three different modes.
Wow.
It's a long time since I've looked at it.
And what would you, what's like one of the your favourite patterns that you've found or kind of worked on?
Well, one that I'm thinking about at the moment, and I think it's a lovely thing, and I haven't found it, are the patterns that we see inside atoms. So let's go from the sun to inside an atom. And when we put energy into an atom, different amounts of energy, many listeners, I imagine, will be aware of atomic spectra. They might have seen that different elements, all elements, in fact, produce different notes, colour notes.
So yes, so light spectra. I remember learning this in school.
Exactly.
You've got light spectrometry, and that's how we can look at a star and we analyse the light it gives off and we know the elements inside it.
Exactly, you have it exactly right. And so that... and every atom sings a particular set of notes. Whenever we look out in space, we know exactly which atom has sung those notes.
So wait, you're saying they're singing notes, but I've always thought of it as like emitting light.
Yes, I'm using a poetic metaphor and saying that they are like notes. I mean, light has a frequency as a sound note has a frequency. They're both
yes,
waves. So I'm being a little bit poetic.
Yeah, no, I like it.
But one of the wonderful, or you could describe them as fingerprints because in a way they look like fingerprints. They're stripes or they look like barcodes. Maybe that's the best way to talk about it. Very beautifully coloured barcodes. But each of those lines, so if we take an atom, take the most prolific atom in the universe, hydrogen, has associated with it a pattern inside the atom. And some of those notes have many patterns associated, and it's sort of the distribution of the electrons in the atom, where we're likely to find them. And those patterns are really like strange fruits or remarkable flowers, and you'll see that the electrons and so they might be just a single dot at the simplest level, or they might be concentric rings, or they might be sort of bilobal structures. And strange flowers. And you'll see that there are just some places where the electron can't go. So they're very interesting things, very beautiful things.
So when you're talking about the dot or the concentric circles, that's where the electron can be with inside the atom.
Exactly.
Exactly. And it's completely unique to each one.
Take hydrogen, it has a certain set of light notes, and then each light note has one or more of these beautiful patterns associated.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And so what have you created around this idea?
Well, I'm still thinking about this at the moment. To be honest, we're still thinking about what to do with this project that we might do on light, so I don't want to say too much.
Okay.
We've plotted these patterns out. And
you can see that they actually make shapes.
Yeah, yeah, and they're very well known amongst physicists, probably since the beginning of quantum mechanics, since the 1930s, 40s, we started to understand these. And I think one of the wonderful things to say is that nature has patterns that pop up all over the place. And I understand that one of the experiments our undergraduates really like at Imperial College is one that reveals these patterns, but in a totally different place.
Mm-hmm.
And it was it's an experiment called the Chladni plate, which is a flat metal plate on a stick, for want of a better description. And you scatter dust on the top. It's fixed at one point, the central point. And then you pull a violin bow down the side of the plate.
Yes, and I know exactly what you're talking about.
And just at the right notes. So think of that note as one of these atomic light notes. You will get this remarkable pattern forming. And there's such a lovely story that Napoleon was crazy about these patterns in around 1809. Ernst Chladni, the man who was a musician and a scientist, who showcased these, was invited to Napoleon's court to share these patterns. And actually, Napoleon paid handsomely to have these demonstrated.
Oh,
and
wow.
I just love the idea that Napoleon, he could see there was this beauty.
Yeah.
And yet, over 100 years later, we see very, very similar forms inside the atom.
So the shape, I'm just going to clarify a little bit for listeners, that I have seen this experiment in real life. And basically, you've got your dust or your sand on top of this big metal plate. And as you run the bow down the side, the plate resonates with this sort of sound, almost like when you run your finger around a wine glass and it makes like a particular note. And it vibrates at that note. And that vibration kind of, you know, it's vibrating all the sand particles up and down, and they end up forming maybe a cross or maybe a circle, and they end up forming this geometric pattern on the plate. And it's magical
and
to
some
see.
Some immensely complicated structures as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. It is very magical. And there's nothing in between, right? If you get off what you call resonance, there's nothing happening.
So it's either you have a really clear pattern.
Exactly.
Or nothing
in between.
And that's the same as the patterns you're
it
seeing
is so
inside.
Similar. And mathematically, the forms are very, very similar.
Wow.
Yeah.
Stunning. My God. That is so cool how you can find the same thing. Oh,
and
amazing.
Actually, just one last thing to say, which is a really nice part of the story. Napoleon was so impressed, he actually put up a mathematics prize for someone to define the maths for this situation that he was seeing on the plates. And I forget the lady's name, but it was a lady that came up with an initial answer.
Oh, so go the girls.
In the days before she was even allowed in the scientific establishment.
Probably wasn't allowed to go to school or anything.
Exactly. So she did well.
Oh. Well, on that note, what is your song number two?
My song number two is a Bach's Trio Sonata in C major, and it's The Gig. And I love it because it has this sense of things building and transforming. And one leading onto the next, and it sort of keeps circling round, but keeps increasing at the same time, very much in the way that I see nature, I think.
A piece that is part of Geraldine's sun paintings depicts the fusion reactions that occur in the sun to produce sunshine. Picture a yellow background with triangles, squiggles, lines and curves in vibrant colours.
Now, I'm really excited because it is obviously the interactive part of the show and we're going to get arty in the studio. We're gonna have a little play with Geraldine has brought this amazing stamp. So almost all like a similar to a stencil, and it has 25 symmetrical isosceles triangles on it in rows of five. So perfect kind of square. And this is part of a bigger piece that you've been exploring, exploring with 30,000 triangles in one painting.
Yes. I mean, in fact, that's why we made this little tool, because it's just a prototype. I knew this painting had 30,000 triangles in it, and I was trying to think, well, how is the best way to make a painting with 30,000 triangles? Let's try at least to be efficient and economic with the approach. So we started experimenting at college with making different things, and this is our first prototype. In the end, it totally failed, and I did it all in the end pretty much by hand with stencils. But this wonderful little tool I just had quite a bit of fun with, because it, as you say, it's this extremely simple array of triangles. And yet, when you print it once, and then I usually leave it to dry, and then return and print again on top in different ways, you can make a myriad of different patterns, which is very much the way we think of nature, in that incredible complexity and incredible variety can come about from a small
really simple building blocks.
Simple elements. Yeah, exactly.
When you think about us, we're all based in, I suppose if you go right down to it, we're all made of kind of carbon and hydrogen and oxygen, yep, and a few, yep, other amino, yep, like nitrogen things.
Exactly.
Or yeah, the immense variety of our genes comes from the four building blocks of DNA.
Exactly, like, so. And then those atoms and molecules are made out of a small number of fundamental particles. And yeah, it's incredible.
I love this like symbolism metaphor. This is great. Okay, so I really don't know what I'm doing, but essentially Geraldine has provided me with some ink. Yes. Is this ink or oil paint?
It is it's both. It's oil-based lino printing ink.
Very professional.
From any supplier. I'm a real oil paint user, but you can buy this anywhere, and actually you can buy water-based inks, which are a bit more user-friendly.
And if you don't have a proper stamp at home, you could make something similar yourself, either by cutting out holes in card, like a stencil, or cutting out shapes in a potato stamp.
Yep, or lino cutting. You can buy pieces of lino and cut into that as well, yeah.
Okay, so I am going to ink up my stamp.
Not
so
too much, just gently.
First, I roll the roller on the ink, and then, as you said, gently, I'm going to roll it on the stamp. Try not to get it anywhere other than the triangles. Okay, so now you have already prepared for me, Blue Peter style, one stamp of the triangles. So yeah, I'm going to see what other pattern I can make by stamping on top.
Yeah, so just have a think about what you like. You can stand up a little bit and just to get a view of what you're
okay,
doing.
So I'm going to turn one where I'm going to do one where I turn the triangles into diamonds, I think. So to do this, I've inverted the stamp. So,
and give it a really nice press, a really nice, and feel, push the pressure all over it. So you provide kind of an even pressure. That's,
oh,
there you go.
Okay. Oh wow! They actually look kind of like lips.
Yeah.
Because I didn't get the alignment quite right, and there's a little gap between the two triangles. I quite like it. That's really funky.
Quite nice.
All right, Geraldine, I'm going to ink one up for you, and you're going to have a go.
I'm going to go. It's a little bit crazy because you were very geometric and you very orderly.
It's my natural, like, rational scientist mind.
Well, it's all experimentation. Okay, so, and then we have something a little bit more sort of like crazy triangles or birds or fireworks.
The first thing I thought of was butterflies, yeah. Some of those triangles, the way they've overlapped, looks kind of like wings fluttering.
Yeah, butterflies,
in a cool perspective. Okay, you've inspired me. Right, I'm going to do one that's going to be less geometric.
Okay, yeah, put a little bit more ink on.
More ink. And you've actually brought in some examples today with you. Can you talk us through some of the designs you've managed to do yourself?
Oh, gosh. I mean, listeners, this has just been something fun in my spare half hours in the studio. So, but what do they look like? I have sort of moths, pinned out moths, woodland, dense conifer woodland, London Underground signs, egg timers, Islamic sort of mosaic tiling.
And did you give yourself any limitations when you were working, other than you can only use the stamp?
Yeah, just use the stamp. I mean, sometimes I change the rules, a bit like nature has rules, has laws of physics. I change them a little bit, so sometimes I stay with one colour. Sometimes I think of in very geometric terms, just and then I call them sort of nudge and rotate, because that's essentially what you're doing. You're sort of nudging it left, right, or rotating it through 90 degrees or something more crazy. That looks like two bird clouds travelling, you know, starting to merge.
The migration ones.
Or waves sort of coming together on water, maybe, from different directions.
Yeah. Oh, you made me feel better about it. I thought it looked a bit rubbish.
Well, that's the thing. You know, the way I do it is I just have all these pieces of card out and I print a whole load and I just have them all out at the same time and I treat it very playfully just between work. And
looking at some of the designs, so you've used some different colours. And, it's, and I suppose you've stamped more than just twice for some of them.
Yeah, some of them. So this one is all blues, but stamped four times, which is really sort of an amazing pattern, just rotating through 90 degrees. There's sort of your butterfly type effect.
Yeah.
Rotation through 45 degrees.
And I like the mountains as well.
The mountains are very nice.
So listeners, we're going to tweet some pictures so that you, if you head to our Twitter at Science Mixtape, you'll be able to see some of these incredible designs yourselves. And it really is amazing how beautiful they can be from 25 triangles, 25 just stamped triangles. A few times.
Yeah. I use them as gift cards for my friends.
I encourage everyone, go make yourself a stencil, make yourself a stamp and have a play. This is really cool. This has really opened my mind. That's amazing. What is song number three?
Song number three is Frank Sinatra, Fly Me to the Moon, because we are here to see and there's so much joy in discovery and I think this song captures that.
Fill my heart with song, let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words,
Geraldine occasionally sits in lectures and makes sketches of lecturers teaching different physics topics. One of these sketches shows lecturer Peter Torek teaching students about electromagnetism, with equations on the blackboard, a Van de Graaff generator to the left of the lecture theatre, and students listening carefully.
Now, Geraldine, I'm really interested in how you go about your work. Like, when you sort of decide you want to work with someone or you want to work on a particular topic, where do you begin?
Usually it's just a continuation of conversations that I'm having and questions pop up. You say, oh, how would we say that? Or why is this so? And it just comes about naturally. And sometimes you'll start trying to figure out an answer to a question and struggle a little bit and then might drop it even for a year or two. and its time will come at another time. Everything sort of has its time, but you know, everything I do is linked because I'm just looking at nature and nature's such a whole that, and physics in particular keep self-referential, it comes around to itself. And so things naturally do come around when the time is right and when maybe I've got a bit more knowledge or I'm speaking to someone else or having a different experience.
And do people approach you or do you sort of hear about some work and think, oh, I want to talk to them and I want to work with them? Or is it both?
It's really a mixture. It's a mixture. It's really natural. It just comes about through conversations and what people are doing with their work and what I'm interested in.
And the journey you want to go on.
Exactly, yeah.
So I'm really interested in how you kind of moved. So you studied physics first.
Yeah.
And how you kind of moved from physics to being an artist and an artist that looks at physics and other kind of sciences. Like, can you tell me a little bit about it? Yeah, and what inspired you along that path?
Yeah. Well, it was really when I left art school. I think the most important question for any artist is to ask themselves, well, what am I going to make work about? And really think about that. You could spend 10, 20 years thinking about that, really, trying to figure that out. And I started at the time, I was reading a lot of Richard Feynman. Maybe people will know him.
He's I love him.
Really wonderful physicist and physics communicator. And I was returning a lot to thinking about discovery in physics, and I had decided I wanted to make work that was really generous, that shared things with people, and celebratory as well, optimistic. And so I naturally returned to science and started thinking about, well, what would happen? Here's my experiment. If I return to science now, but with this art training, and what sort of questions might I ask and what sort of answers might I find? And I was just so lucky. Imperial College is kind of my local college. It's 5 miles down the road. And I sent an email to somebody whose name I got from somebody at a talk. And he didn't throw it in the bin. And he decided to help me, and that was great. And his name is Terry Rudolph. He's a a quantum theoretical physicist who works actually now in California building a quantum computer temporarily, and then I think he's back at college. But he was really great, and he helped me get this Leverhulme Trust Award, which helped fund my first year of work, and he just let me go anywhere I wanted in the physics department at Imperial College, and that was such a privilege, and it was so enjoyable, and gave me the foundation for the work that I've been doing since then, and that was around 2011. So.
And do you feel that you're, after being in art school, you actually thought about things or looked at things differently than you had done before? In terms of the physics and the science?
Oh, I see. Well, it's really hard to say because there are all sorts of things happening when you return to a university and you're not a student and you're not staff. So I don't know whether it's because you're an artist or not, but you have a different kind of standing that you can ask questions that maybe you were too afraid to ask as a student because they sound a bit stupid.
What would be an example of a stupid question?
Well, I think in physics, that so much of what we look at in physics are worlds we can never experience ourselves. You know, what our existence here in this recording studio is a very narrow slither of reality. It's this scale and it's at this time. Whereas with physics, we look at the tiniest scales.
Yeah.
And we look at the greatest scales, and we look at the most extreme temperatures, and we look at the beginning of time, and we look forward to the end of time, and none of that we can see. We have to measure and very carefully observe with our measuring devices and sort of extend our senses and extend our imaginations. And physics is remarkable because we write down incredible ideas very succinctly, very briefly. I mean, it's a phenomenon. We might write about the expansion of the universe just with a few symbols. And sometimes when you're studying, you don't have the privilege of saying, okay, hang on, let's just think about that remarkable idea that just went on the board and let's really think about it and talk about it. Because in fact, sometimes in one lecture, you might see a ton of remarkable ideas. Yeah. Actually, each one you could spend days talking about. And so I have a bit more of that privilege to
really drill into
Yeah, absolutely. And also to the way we talk about things in physics is sometimes historical because we've discovered things and we talk about them in a certain way. And it's really nice to say, can we talk about this differently? Are we saying it the best way? And that's sort of the privilege that I think the artist has in coming back. Can we explain this to people in a different way? I'll have a bit more time.
Yeah, so it'd be like, this is how the textbook describes it, but can we...
Are there better ways? And ways that are more accessible for people and, less impenetrable looking.
And what kind of response do you get from the scientists that you're working with? How do they respond to kind of the artist input?
I find it's really positive that it's really feels like teamwork, and I get a lot out of it. But I think they really enjoy different ways of seeing their world that they feel so familiar with, and different ways of the different perspectives that someone else can offer on their work. And I think they have the same excitement, which are there are ways to look at things differently, and to take time to do that is a really exciting thing, and it's almost a discovery in itself. So I find it very enjoyable, and I think they do too.
Yeah. I mean, even just today talking to you or thinking differently about that stamp of 25 triangles, you feel like you're having a new little discovery yourself, and that's really, it's really enjoyable.
Absolutely.
Really,
and there
positive.
There's a little gap to be filled, I think, possibly with science, that to explore ways to talk about things. I mean, artists over the years have been painting landscapes as long as we can remember, but there are these hidden landscapes that are so rich and I think can take you to places. So I find myself in places that were previously totally unimaginable in terms of the patterns that
like
I might
patterns
make.
Inside an atom.
Exactly. And this painting I've been working on at the moment with these 30,000 triangles, I would never 2 years ago have imagined that that is something that I might make or even conceive of it. You know, it came about out of conversations and then scientific papers and reading things and twisting things around and looking at things in different ways. And so very much like the process of science, you can discover a new formulation, a new way of saying something. And it is a landscape and it's a way of understanding something. And science can get you to places that you could never imagine, which is really wonderful.
Really is. What is song number four?
Song number four. Aha, yes, this is pretty crazy, actually. This is the Bach Brandenburg number 5 harpsichord solo. And I can only imagine what those people must have thought in the 18th century when they heard this.
Geraldine exhibited some of her work at the Royal Society in 2011. One of her pieces was inspired by theoretical physicist Terry Rudolph at Imperial College. Picture an oil painting on stretched Japanese paper of a man writing out equations on a window.
Science.
News.
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 Avatar therapy may reduce auditory hallucinations for people with schizophrenia.
Thunderstorms can generate nuclear reactions.
NASA believe they know how to make Mars green again.
Deep fat frying increases cloud formation, but to what effect?
And a mathematically inspired tour through the Metropolitan Art Museum.
Scientists print biosolar cells on paper with an inkjet printer.
Great mix of stories this week. Miriam, straight away, we're making Mars green again. Was it green in the past?
Okay, so back in the day, Mars did actually have an atmosphere, but recently its magnetic field decreased. So basically, the magnetic field around planets, just like ours, helped to prevent like the solar wind and those harmful particles from affecting our atmosphere. So things like the northern lights just show that our magnetic field around Earth are protecting us against all the harmful kind of particles from space.
Yeah, because Mars doesn't have much atmosphere now, right?
No.
And it's been just blown away by the solar wind.
Exactly. Uh-huh. So, James Green, who is the director of NASA's Planetary Science Division, came up with this idea and made simulations about putting a closed circuit. So this is an actual kind of, it's called a dipole, but it's basically just like a electronic circuit that they put in front of Mars, and that will create its own magnetic field, hopefully big enough that it will have the same effect as our magnetic field on Earth, and then prevent all those solar wind particles from hitting Mars, and then hopefully in a few years apparently Mars will get its atmosphere back again.
It will just regenerate.
Yeah, exactly. And they say in a few years, which I find crazy.
For a whole planet.
Yeah, exactly.
That's insane.
But a lot of people think this is like such a crazy idea, but he's really keen on it, and they think that we can hopefully get like more water on Mars, like liquid surface water, and yeah, just maybe life on Mars in the future as well, if they do this.
It's like a grow your own planet project. Wow, that is really interesting. Geraldine, please tell me about these storms that can create nuclear reactions.
Well, it's an interesting idea that actually scientists thought of 100 years ago that this might happen. But 100 years ago, we didn't know what a neutron was, and we certainly didn't know what antimatter was. So we were not really in a position to really go looking for these nuclear reactions. But now it turns out in Japan, where we have tremendous lightning storms, I understand that scientists have been studying these processes, and essentially the electric fields that build up in clouds are so powerful that they accelerate charged particles like electrons to huge levels of acceleration, and they produce very, very powerful light called gamma rays. And the gamma rays knock neutrons out of nitrogen-14, which creates an unstable nitrogen nucleus and some neutrons, and then that decays and that produces antineutrinos and positrons, which is our antimatter. And so the scientists in Japan have looked for both the gamma ray burst at the start and then the neutrons. And also this annihilation between positrons and electrons from the antimatter that's produced, which makes such a very definite signature. And they found all of that recently, and that was a new paper in Nature. So
all of these reactions are happening in the thunderstorm, but it's not like kind of nuclear. We don't need to worry about it. Right?
No, I don't think we need to worry. But it just really shows. It's just a really nice bit of physics.
Yeah,
and explains, I think. I'm no expert in this, but I think scientists have understood what you call the isotropic mixtures in the atmosphere. So we have isotopes, different versions of the same atoms.
Element,
yeah, exactly. Missing neutrons or additional neutrons.
And it's because in this thunderstorm...
This is certainly a contributor to that. And so it helps us colour in our understanding of the atmospheric landscape a little bit more.
And how we've got all of the different... isotopes that we have.
Exactly, as far as I understand.
That's quite it was a scary headline. I'm glad that it's not like a nuclear bomb with lightning.
No, you're fine.
So my story about this avatar therapy I thought was really, really interesting. So it's for people with schizophrenia, I think 70-80% of people will experience auditory hallucinations, which are often insulting or threatening to them and can be really, really distressing. And you're often given drug treatments to reduce these symptoms, but one in four people will still experience the voices. It's not effective for everyone. And this is a new study from King's College London, where they had 150 patients who'd had schizophrenia for approximately 20 years and heard 3 to 4 voices on average, and for who drugs were not really working. And half of the group took an avatar therapy session, which basically was about giving a voice and giving the voice like a face. So together with a therapist, they would describe what they thought the voice kind of looked like, what it sounded like, and things it normally said. And then in this therapy session, you had the patient, the therapist, and the avatar voiced by the therapist. And it would sort of say the things that the patient had said that it would normally say. And it gave them an opportunity to kind of respond to it and stand up to it and to take some of that power away and give it back to the patient. And after sort of 12 weeks, it seemed much more effective than the other half of the group that just had a normal therapy counselling session.
Mm. Just sort of gets it out into the room.
Yeah.
It doesn't like sharing your worries. Yeah. It can be such a positive thing.
I think it's the same as like naming, if you name something, then you control it a bit more. Yeah, and it's the same as that. But with this, it's putting a face on it. And I just thought that was, really interesting. Obviously, it's still very early technology, but one to watch, I think. A really cool new way.
Yeah.
Miriam, tell me about our biosolar cells.
Okay, so scientists from Imperial College, University of Cambridge and Central Saint Martins created a 2-in-1 solar bio battery and solar panel by printing circuitry and living cyanobacteria onto paper, which I found insane. So cyanobacteria are basically microorganisms that produce or gain energy from photosynthesis. But from this photosynthesis reaction, you actually produce electrons and protons. And scientists make these things called biobatteries, where they use these bacteria because they produce electrons and protons. Those charges are separated, and when they try and go back to each other, because opposites like attract, you create a current, and so that's how you make current using like bacteria. But instead, these scientists thought they would use an inkjet printer, which we have at home, and print these bacteria onto circuitry on paper. And so basically, they've created these disposable electronics that you can power like digital clocks and stuff like that, which I found insane.
Oh my god!
Yeah, wow. It's so cool. And so the bacteria die off eventually.
But I was going to say, like, how long can they survive just on the paper?
100 hours on paper. So like they're thinking they can make sort of like monitors for like developing countries and hospitals and to like monitor stuff like glucose levels and stuff, and they're disposable, so like patients could just use them and then just dispose of them, and they're biodegradable as well, so they're super cheap to make because you use a printer to print them on.
Wow.
So, yeah.
It's God. That is really exciting new technology. Mm-hmm. That's really cool. And we probably only have time for one more news story. So Geraldine, tell me about your math at the Met.
Okay. Well, this is not so much news, but I think it's a really nice thing to share with listeners, which is two mathematical and sort of science historian individuals had written up in Scientific American this week, a sort of mathematical tour through the Met, and featured works or things that relate to mathematics. So Roman dice, but some of those are 20-faced icosahedral, icosahedra dice with 20 equilateral triangles grouped into fives. And then there's Jura's etching of called Melancholia, which includes a magic square where all the numbers add up to 34 and a sphere and a compass. And they've just done this tour through, and I think it's a really nice thing for all of us to think about when we go to our galleries and museums. Make your own tour, you know, don't wait for someone to curate it.
Yeah.
And next time I go, I think I'm going to look for the atom at the British Museum or something. And it's amazing what you can find, and it gives you a perspective on human thought over the ages, and just a detective, play detective in your own museum.
Yeah, because I think also back in the day, like, art and maths were both they were much more linked. I mean, you look at Leonardo da Vinci,
yeah.
And he was incredibly scientifically minded and mathematical and made this amazing artwork as well. And yeah, I think there was a lot of cross influence.
I think it's rich territory. You'll definitely find things.
Yeah. Oh, exciting. Go do that, listeners. Song number five.
Song number five is, Just Beautiful. Another Bach, the Chaconne, Partita number 2.
Prints called Repulsive Theory showcases two magnets and their respective magnetic fields repelling each other on Japanese mulberry paper.
So cool. So talking about your artwork, where can listeners see it? Where can we find it?
It's very easy. Findingpatterns.info.
Findingpatterns.info.
On the web, yeah.
It's all on your website. Brilliant. And will you be giving any more talks or anything that people can come to?
I am giving a student talk this week at Imperial.
Imperial students.
Imperial students.
Get yourselves there.
Actually, it can get very busy, so it's probably not going to be wise to invite the public. But I haven't got anything planned right at the moment. I'm in the middle of work. I'm planning to do another few, actually, of these 30,000 triangle paintings and explore different formations of those.
So I meant to ask you before, but I got really distracted by making my own triangles. What is the 30,000 triangles based on?
Ooh, it's tricky to explain briefly over the radio, but it's a very subtle effect that we see when we look at tiny particles of matter and light. So I don't really like to use the word too much, this quantum word, but this is just what I'm talking about, what we see when we look at very small things. And I don't think we have time to go into too much detail, but essentially, historically, we've been confused by something that seems to happen when we feel like we take more information or try to find out what's going on. We feel like we lose something that we're observing. And my question was, well, where's it gone? Where's the thing? And the answer is it hasn't gone. We just need to look much more carefully and consider everything in the round. We haven't destroyed anything by looking. It's nothing of that sort. It's just a matter of looking more carefully and being careful about how we represent our information, and then we can see that the phenomena hasn't disappeared. And so that's what the painting tries to answer. And it's a very particular point about a very subtle effect in nature, but I think it has wider ramifications for all of us, which is when you try to understand anything, be careful to consider everything
and look at it from different angles.
Exactly, look at it from different perspectives and organize your data in different ways and see what it tells you. And I think it's really true in life.
And so with the triangles, are you trying to create kind of a different illusions, the different ways you look at them?
The triangles actually are, a lot of my work involves finding new conventions and new ways of saying things, are literally a convention for plotting that data. And those 30,000 triangles are points of data or theoretical measurements, and
wow,
a way of showing that and revealing the pattern that we thought we had lost.
I wish you luck with that. That's a lot of triangles.
Yeah, so that's going on. And I'm just starting some work with some scientists at Durham, Oxford and Imperial. And it's really nice work. They are, I'm sort of the project artist, I guess you could say. It's a 5-year project, and they are building molecules from atoms and then arranging those molecules into formations and seeing what the relationships are between those molecules. It's beautiful work. And who knows what we will find and what new ways we'll find of talking about what we know.
Oh, it's so exciting. It's so cool that you get to just literally, like you say, explore and play and ask questions.
Yeah, it's really thrilling.
Yeah. So we it's coming to the end of the show. We need to reveal the answer to our brain teaser.
Okay.
Miriam, what people have been saying?
So just to remind you what the brain teaser was, it was, even though it comes in a can, this is something you shouldn't eat. Instead, you add it to walls to make a room look really neat. What am I? So Dante, Ella and RB all tweeted in with the answer paint, and that is correct.
Congratulations to them. Well done. And for your final song, I believe, Geraldine, you're going to read us a poem.
I am going to read you a poem. Yes, go on.
I was going to say, as always, please tell me why you picked this poem.
Oh, yeah. There are so many reasons. Maybe you'll understand when I read it. But it's a poem by a chap called Du Fu, an ancient Chinese poet. And it is so evocative and so beautiful. And it activates all of the senses, the smell and the sound of this man looking at the moon in his back garden. Okay, so shall I read? Above the tower, a lone, twice-sized moon, on the cold river passing night-filled homes, it scatters restless gold across the waves. On mats, it shines richer than silken gauze. Empty peaks, silence, among sparse stars, not yet flawed, it drifts. Pine and cinnamon spreading in my old garden. All light. All 10,000 miles at once in its light.
That's beautiful. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure, thank you.
For more Science Mixtape, you can find our shows on Audioboom, iTunes or any other podcast provider. Or join us live every Saturday at 10 a.m. on Soho Radio, recently voted the best online radio station in the world.